after a recess from this morning in the Senate House Health and Human Services Committee for Tuesday, April 26th. We have a couple of bills we're going to try to hear this afternoon, and we are anticipating continuing, recessing again, and continuing later this evening. So first on our list is Senate File 288. Senator Howe, if you are ready, we would be happy to hear your bill.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 288, I have with me Gary Iacco, who's going to explain the technical parts of the bill here. This is a patient safety bill. It has to do with registrations for dental laboratories, requiring dental technicians to employed by laboratories to meet continuing education requirements, and also for registration of dental labs. And I guess before we get into discussion, I would like to get the bill in its proper form, and I have an author's amendment, a delete all amendment.
All right, members, I believe you have an A3 amendment. It is a delete all amendment, and Senator Higgins offers the A3 amendment as an author's amendment. Do you want to talk about it at all before we adopt it, or just
one substantive change in that bill. And I guess I have Mr. Yaffo explain that, or maybe it would be better maybe the council would.
I'll tell you what, Senator Howe, why don't we just adopt the bill since it's a delete all, and then you can present the bill as amended. Senator Higgins moves the A3 amendment be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is before you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, I'll let Gary Iacco introduce himself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, senators, and staff. My name is Gary Iacco, and I own Dimension Dental Design. It's a dental laboratory located in Hastings, Minnesota. I also serve as Vice President of the Midwest Dental Laboratory Association, and I'm also a member of the National Association of Dental Laboratory Board of Directors. Thank you very much for hearing this bill. The bill is about safety, as Senator Howe stated. Safety for the dental patients, the dentist, their staff, and dental technicians. Currently in Minnesota, dental labs are not required to register with any state or federal agency. According to industry representatives, there's an estimated 400 to 500 dental labs in Minnesota alone. And this doesn't include many of the other hundreds of labs from outside of Minnesota doing business here. If there was a safety issue or a recall with products or materials, there would be no comprehensive way of notifying patients, dentists, or their labs. Briefly, some of the highlights of the bill. It requires any dental lab doing business in Minnesota to register with the state. Currently, there are 9 other states that require some type of registration, with another 9 states with pending legislation. Texas and South Carolina have had this in place for nearly 20 years now. Minnesota dentists would need to use labs that are registered with the state, and these labs can be located anywhere, not just in Minnesota. Material content of the restoration must be provided to the dentists for the patient's records. Country of origin, in whole or in part, where the work was performed, needs to be sent to the dentist. As I was getting ready to come this morning, I was ironing my handkerchief, and my handkerchief has a material content sheet and a country of origin on my handkerchief, but we don't require it on any of the teeth or dentures or things that we supply to any of our dentists. There's a continuing education of 8 hours every 2 years for dental technicians, which include updated infection control procedures. These can be accomplished not only by attending educational meetings, but also through webinars, written exams, and trade journals. So there would not really be an additional cost to anyone to get the additional education. It cleans up an outstated code in the Board of Dentistry statutes that allow dentists now to fax or electronically send a prescription to a dental lab. In the code, the dental code, it says that it has to be handwritten, and obviously that was probably done in the 20s or the 30s before we had fax machines or electronics. Laboratories shall employ a certified dental technician or the ISO certified, or DAMAS, which is a Dental Appliance Manufacturers Association, similar to an ISO for the dental industry in America and in England, or be a certified dental laboratory. Over the past 20 months or so, our lab association has met with the executive director, Marshall Schrank, from the Board of Dentistry, and representatives from the Minnesota Dental Association to formulate this bill so that we were all understanding what it would do and be in agreement. Last year, our board voted to support the bill. The Board of Dentistry voted to support the bill. And we wanted to make sure that, like I said, we were all together and we did not want this to be any kind of a head-butting regulation. And on behalf of the members of the Midwest Dental Laboratory Association, thank you very much for your thoughtful consideration and your vote in favor of this important safety bill today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from the committee? Questions from the committee. Are there any other members of the audience here that would like to? I'm sorry, sir.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at line 2.4, and I think it's just a typo. I think manufacturers should be manufacturers. The name of the DAMAS is Dental Appliance Manufacturers Audit System, possibly?
I think you may be correct. Is there somebody who knows what the name of that organization is that can tell us whether that is supposed to be manufacturer or manufacturers?
What line are we on? I'm sorry. I just received the new update.
It's, line 2.4 of the bill, it's giving the long version of the acronym DAMAS and the word M.
It's manufacturers.
Manufacturer. So
plural.
So it's misspelled here.
Yes.
All right. Senator Higgins moves an oral amendment to.
Can we just incorporate it?
Just incorporate that into the okay. Any other questions from the members of the committee? Mr. Sposetto, were you wishing to make a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dominic Sposetto, I represent the Minnesota Dental Association. And first of all, I'd like to thank Senator Howe for working with us on this legislation. We've had several meetings to discuss the proposal, and we think we support the concept of what he's attempting to do in terms of regulating these products. There are a lot of products that have now become available through various other foreign countries where we're not sure of the material or the workmanship, and we think this is a step in the right direction to assure quality and protection for our consumers. The major concern that the Dental Association had with this bill, and to be honest, I'm not quite sure that the language entirely addresses that concern, but it was something we discussed with Senator Howe, is we want to make sure that this does not affect a dentist in his own dental practice that chooses to manufacture or fabricate dentures and other appliances. I know it's not their intention to do so. Obviously, we wouldn't want the dentist regulated as a dental technician or a dental laboratory because they're already regulated by the Board of Dentistry for all of the dental work they do, and we wouldn't want to add any additional continuing education or other requirements to that. I think there's agreement among all of us at the table that that's correct. I just wanted to make sure that the language, which I've just seen, does that, and I'd be willing to work with the senator as this advances to make sure that that's actually happens. Thank you.
Thank you. I did want to just ask on the final page of the bill, page 4, there is a section of appropriations where the appropriation amounts are blank. Sir Howell, or maybe one of your testifiers, is there an expectation that those blanks would be filled in with a number this year, or what is the intent here?
Mr. Chair, assumption was that the fee that would be generated from the certification fee would take care of the appropriations. I do not have the total number of labs that would apply for that. I wonder if Mr. Yockel could speak to that.
Thank you very much. Senator, the appropriations fee right now is set at $300 per biennium. And that, in discussion with Marshall Schrag, the Executive Director of Board of Dentistry, based on about 400 or so dental laboratories, and There could be up to 1,000 laboratories registering with the state.
And maybe a Senate Council, do we need to amend this language then to reflect something that would say appropriations from the fees generated would be applied to? How would we do this?
Mr. Chair, there is language in there that has the fees going into the state government special revenue fund. We then have to appropriate from that fund to the Board of Dentistry to do the implementation of these sections.
So the budgetary effect is essentially neutral.
It would be neutral, that's correct.
It still
correct.
Has to be a number.
Right.
How do we arrive at a number?
Well, that's you should have a fiscal note from the board that is going to tell you what those numbers are.
We have such a fiscal note. Do we have a note?
Oh, Mr.
Senator Hahn. Senator Howell, thank you very much. I'm Marshall Schrag. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry, and we have not prepared a formal fiscal note on this. However, the sentiment that's been expressed is correct, that we anticipate that the fee and the number of labs anticipated would cover the costs of the board for all of the costs in implementing this. What would be required, though, is that there be a dollar amount that then increases the board's base budget appropriation for authorized spending for the biennium and the biennia to come. So you will need a fiscal note on this, and I will do that for you.
Thank you. I'm reluctant to pass this out of the committee until we've determined what that amount is. I don't think that would be, I think this has to go to Judiciary Committee, but I don't know that they would be the committee that would be trying to figure that out or understand what that should be.
Mr. Chair, could we put a estimated dollar amount in and with the final preparation of a fiscal note, send it back to this committee, and if you do not feel comfortable with it, you pull it back and hear it again in the committee.
Well, maybe I could get some advice from council or others on the committee, but we could potentially put a number in here, and that number could be amended in Judiciary, I assume.
Sure.
But there should be some number. Senator Berger, did you?
Mr. Chairman, after this bill gets done in Judiciary, it should go to the Finance Committee.
Right.
It doesn't go straight to the floor, so at that time, then, if an amendment would be needed to adjust the appropriation, it could be done. I mean, I feel comfortable as long as we've had testimony that the fees in the bill are going to cover the board's cost.
Mr. Chair, I agree with what Senator Berglund said. It sounds like there are about 1,400 entities at $300. You know, that's $420,000. So, you know, put in some money less than that, you're good to go. And then we can amend it in finance.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Marshall here has done some figuring on here. There might be an estimated number.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, you indicated 1,400. I thought I had heard 400 in Minnesota that we would expect. Is that?
Did I hear it wrong? Way wrong.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. We estimate 400 to 500 laboratories in Minnesota,
so the dental,
plus the additional labs that operate in Minnesota that are not based in Minnesota, whether in California or wherever, probably brings it up to about 1,000, maybe 1,100 laboratories total doing business in Minnesota.
Okay. Bad math on my part. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I appreciate the update on the figures as well. That at $300 a piece, these are fees that are being paid biennially, and so we would be looking at $500 to $600 per year. And at $300, that would be $150,000 to $180,000, which would be more than what the board would require in order to manage this program.
So are you suggesting we put in $150,000 in the two blanks at this point?
That seems to be the best figure we have to work with at this point.
Just a second.
It does. That's going to special revenue.
That's our special revenue. What our analyst is suggesting is maybe we just leave this blank rather than put a number in that we're just going to make up here.
All right.
There isn't going to be a fiscal note, but I serve on the Finance Committee, as do other members of this committee, and we certainly will not pass it out of Finance Committee until we have some assessment here established by a fiscal note. So hopefully we'll have that by that point. And my understanding, this has to go to Judiciary. Is that where it's going to be requested?
I don't know why.
I'm wondering
they
that
don't
myself.
Have enough bills to hear.
I know the Judiciary, maybe they want to go to Judiciary Committee so it will never come out again. I don't know if that's here. They have a lot of bills in that committee, I know that. But I'm trying to, do you know, Senator Howe?
I do not. I do not know if Senator Limmer has requested this or not.
It seems a little unusual to me. I don't serve on the Judiciary Committee.
I think it could be passed and referred to the Finance Committee.
I think we'll do that, and if Judiciary wants it back, then they can call it back.
And I'll certainly
talk to
Senator.
I don't see anything obviously in here that would call into that, but I also don't want to, if another chairman has asked for that bill, I need to send it to him, but because we're uncertain about that right now, we'll pass it to the Finance Committee. Are there any other questions from members of the committee? Or any other testimony?
Mr. Chair, if you, Marshall Schrag again, yes, from the Board of Dentistry. If you don't mind, I don't mean to add more confusion to this than I already have, but what I do want to point out on behalf of the board is that the board has supported this language and does so in the interest of public safety. This is a very unusual bill for the board to be involved with in that the Board of Dentistry is accustomed to licensing and regulating individuals, not companies or labs. And so this is unusual, but it made sense when the concerns were brought to the board that it would be incorporated into the Dental Practice Act, since dental practices act as a very close team. And in order to regulate them appropriately, it made sense to the board to do that in this context. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So if somebody else that wanted to make a comment, please come forward. Welcome to committee.
Hello, thank you, Chairman Han and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Michael Helgeson. I'm a geriatric dentist taking care of geriatric patients, and I'm also the chief executive officer of Apple Tree Dental, which is a nonprofit organization here in Minnesota. Apple Tree delivers on-site dental care to about 100 nursing facilities in 5 regions around the state. We have a professional staff model of about 135 people on our staff, patterned after the Mayo Clinic's group medical practice model. And we treat more than 100 centenarians, people over 100, each year in our practice. And as you might imagine, many of them wear dentures and partials and have issues with their dentures and partials. So that's why I'm here today to talk about this bill regarding dental labs. As you might imagine, our dentists and our own staff members that do the lab work very closely together to repair, reline, and remake thousands of dentures and partial dentures safely and effectively each year. In fact, we celebrated our 25th year this year. Our lab staff only work as part of our dental practice. They're not a commercial lab. They do not do any lab work for anyone other than the dentists that they're directly working with on a case-by-case basis. And we believe that that level of supervision and direction and that part of our dental practice is well managed along with the other parts of our practice. So we believe that this bill has some good points that we support, and I want to echo the comments that were made by Dominic Spizzetto from the Dental Association. I want to be very clear that we're not opposed. In fact, we support the bill's central purpose, which is to protect Minnesotans by ensuring the quality of commercial dental labs and the work that they do, particularly labs in other states and so on. However, we're opposed to the potential for this bill to reach inside dental practices and create another regulatory system when the dental practices are already well-regulated, and we believe can safely carry out lab activities as part of the other activities that they carry out. We believe this will drive up our costs, and as many of you know, those of us in the dental safety net have experienced some pretty massive cuts in the last couple of years, including of a loss of about half of the services that are covered for our adult patients, as well as some significant cuts to the critical access dental provider program. So we're looking forward to working with the author, working with the Minnesota Dental Association, and seeing if we can't make some tweaks to the language in this bill so that it more clearly focuses on the activities of commercial dental labs and not on activities taking place within a dental practice itself. So thank you for the opportunity, and I'd welcome any questions.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee or anyone else who wishes to testify? Seeing none.
Thank you.
We would need a motion to recommend a pass and send to the Finance Committee. We have a Senator Lori moves that Senate File, 288 as amended, be recommended pass and sent to the Finance Committee. One moment. We do have a letter here from a memo here from Senator Limmer and the Judiciary Committee that's requesting this be sent to Judiciary and Public Safety. We were debating that earlier, and Mr. Beers went and got the note. We are questioning whether their reasoning makes sense. I guess if you're comfortable, can we just lay this aside for a few minutes until we confirm with Senator Limmer's staff that they do want this? We're not sure that it makes sense to go to Judiciary, but we do have a request. So why don't we just lay this aside, and we'll check with Senator Limmer. We'll bring it back up after we find out.
So thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Can we withdraw your... Senator Lori withdraws his motion. Thank you.
On the agenda, we have Senate File 775.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a bill that was brought to us by the Board of Dentistry, and I have asked Mr. Schrag if he would be willing to come and talk about the bill, since this is a bill that they have proposed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, again, I'm Marshall Schrag. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry, and the bill that you have before you, Senate File 775, is a bill that the Board of Dentistry did ask to be considered. It is primarily technical changes that correct language and clarify things within our Practice Act. Also within the bill, there are two policy issues. It's up to, I guess, it's the chair's pleasure whether you'd like me to read through this.
Mr. Drake, can you pull the microphone a little closer? And,
certainly.
We're having trouble hearing. It's not amplifying. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Anyway, I'm asking the chair's pleasure whether you'd like me to read through each of the changes and the rationale for that, or if you want to focus on the policy pieces.
Well, if any of the members of the committee want to hear through the specific pieces, certainly speak up. Otherwise, we just want to address the policy pieces.
Okay, there are, like I said, two specific policy issues. The most significant of this for us is with regard to Section 5, Subdivision 10, that starts on line 4.29. What this does is permit the board. Gives the board statutory authorization to require that any applicant or licensure to the board, and currently the licensed dentists, dental therapists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants, and perhaps soon dental labs, that any applicant for licensure would be required to submit a criminal background history so that that could be considered as part of what the board determines for the fitness practice of that particular individual. Currently, the board does request this on our applications, and it is self-identified that the individual identifies whether they've had any previous convictions, and based upon that, the board takes action, reviews those cases, and determines what would be required in order for that individual to be licensed. We are aware that it's apparently only the, as we've come to know them, the honest criminals that are identifying those convictions, and that it's not a fair playing field. And, in order to make sure that we have further information on all applicants, we would require this to be part of the application process. The other policy piece has to do with what is in section 6, starting on line 6.7, 6.10, and that has to do with the requirement that anyone that we regulate provide the board with a current email address. Most of our communication now for cost-saving measures and timeliness is done through electronic measures. And in order to make sure that we have current addresses, we again currently request that on applications and on renewal forms, but we find that a significant number of the email addresses we have in current, and we choose now to fill that in. So we are requesting that that become something that we can require as a condition of our licensure. And if anybody has any questions to any of that, I'd be happy to respond.
Senator Higgins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Schrag, what happens if somebody doesn't have an email address? It doesn't say if they have one. It just says you have to provide one.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, that has been considered in the board in its public meetings up until now, has been advised and has determined that that the times are such that everybody in Minnesota should have either have a computer or have access to one of the public libraries, and that there are enough services available that provide free email service that would not be for any area. So it would be required of all individuals.
Mr. Chair, I'm a pretty connected person, but I do know that there are people who run kicking and screaming from emails, and so the fact that somehow your license is going to be based on whether you have an email, it seems a little weird. I'll just say that, and I think it ought to say, I don't think it ought to be a flat out requirement. I think that's the first time I think I've seen that we have actually required that somebody does that for a license.
Senator Berglund?
You know, the group I would worry about the most are the retired dentists who are not in practice now but maintain their license so they can donate dental services, and they may not. I think all dental practices probably have access to computers and email, but retired dentists may not. So it might be that you'd want to think about allowing an exception for that.
Uh-oh,
what are they doing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, thank you for those suggestions. The idea was to streamline this and assist with cost savings, and if it's not across the board, if it's not entirely done, then you're still looking at various manual systems and additional costs. There are ways that we can do that, and at this point, the board is requesting the authority to require it of all licenses.
Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, I have a question on another part if we've exhausted that, and it's line 3.5. And we're changing this Anyway, it says that somebody who presents a certificate of having passed all components of the board, which I think is a really odd collection of words all put together. I don't know that, or I'd like to know if there actually is a certificate that says I have passed all components of this, and if so, it probably has a name. Because I think that there's no certificate that says having passed all components of the board or of the exam. So I'm questioning the language on that piece. And Dr. Fragg, could 3.5. And could you speak? I know the microphone's right next to you, but project, would you please?
Okay.
Thank you.
Actually, Senator Higgins, we do take the examination from the National Board of Dental Examination. We receive a certificate that indicates that they have passed to take the those exams. That National Board is an organization, an agency that does the examining, and there are currently two parts of that National Board exam, Parts 1 and Part 2, and those can be passed separately. They're taking the pass separately. So what we're requesting is that they provide us the certification that they have completed both exams. So the significant change here is with regard to the name of the entity rather than the material that they're submitting.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, could we instead... where it says present a certificate of, could we say provides certification or something like that? It just seems so oddly stated. Presents a certificate of having passed. Does the certificate have a name? Is it a certification? Is it something else? It's just oddly stated.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I'd be happy to modify that language, but it actually is a certificate of passing an exam that they have issued. So if you're more comfortable with presents a certification of having passed the components,
or certifies or something? Certifies that they have passed, or
what you require on the application. On the application is that they submit the original certificate of having passed the exam. So I'm a little concerned that certification may change that thing to be in the form of a letter rather than the actual certificate.
Yeah.
But I'm comfortable with looking at that and seeing if there's some way to. So it's not so weird.
That would be great, and maybe, Mr. Chair, writing it in committee isn't the right thing to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Higgins, and also Senator Berglund, to your previous comment about the email address, and I was just having a brief conversation here at the table. I think, and there has been expressed a willingness to work on the language on the two issues that were raised. I think there may be a way to craft an exception, I think particularly in the case, as you said, of maybe retired dentists who want to still be involved in the process who may not have an email address or one readily available, that there may be some language that we could insert into the bill that would create an exception under certain circumstances. Mr. Schrag has indicated willingness to work on that. We could certainly do that. And this bill does have to go to judiciary, I understand, so we could probably make that correction there if that's acceptable to the committee.
Senator Burton.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. I can't imagine that it would be more than a handful of people.
Right.
And I can't imagine the cost of doing something manually for them would be. Most of your savings will still come.
And then, Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
The other question I have is on the criminal background check. And I'm wondering how the board will ensure that the actions that are taken are taken in a way that just doesn't fence out anybody who has a history of committing a crime sometime in their past. We have in statute that there's a point at which people are, to have served their time and be considered rehabilitated. And the more of these that we put into statute, the more ways we keep people from making a living and providing for their families. And so I'm a little concerned about this. I understand why you would want to at least know that there's the history there. But I'd like some reassurance that this isn't just a way to fence people out.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, thank you very much for the question. And it is something that that the board and the staff have addressed and struggled with since we became ready to ask that question on the application. We're doing that administratively now with those who self-report that they have a conviction. It has not led to the denial of licensure for anyone. In fact, most of the criminal convictions that the board is seeing are from DUIs or from minor consumption, so having been caught drinking underage. And in those cases, what the board does prior to issuing the license is refer those individuals to the Health Professional Services Program, HPSP, which is available for all health professionals to determine if they have an illness or a problem that requires monitoring, so that we can be assured that that when they do become licensed, that they are appropriately monitored if they need to be. Other criminal convictions that we reviewed have often been poor judgment issues that we've talked to the individual about professionalism and the higher expectation of professionals. As I said, it has not led to any denials of licensure. The Criminal Rehabilitation Act is something that we're bound to, and so if those individuals have a right to be considered for licensure. But the board also has a responsibility to the public to ensure that that individuals who are licensed are fit to practice. So it does give us the opportunity to review the kind of case-by-case level, the individual circumstances, and to appropriately note in their record in the event that there are future concerns that are raised by the public through complaints, that that there is some history there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Schreiger, maybe Senate Counsel, further in that same section of the bill, line 6.5 and 6.6 refers to the board may take action according to sections 214.10 and .103. What do those sections refer to? Is that sanctioning provisions that the board is permitted to? What exactly is that referring to? Do you know, Mr. Schreiger?
There's some confusion, Senator Hand. Which lines are you referring to?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. And for Senate Counsel, the bill refers to on line 6.5 and 6.6. This is in the. Wait, I'm looking at the wrong bill. This is not the. No, this is the right one. That's the right one. Right. It refers to the board may take action according to sections 214.10 and 214.103. And just wanted to clarify that those are.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, that Chapter 214 is the kind of the generic licensing board statutes, and those deal with complaint, investigation, and hearing. 103, health-related licensing board, the complaint, investigation, and hearing requirements.
Okay. Members, unless there's any other questions. Senator Hand, do you want to make a motion?
And Mr. Chair and members, and I believe this bill is going to judiciary for good reason. Okay. We see criminal sanctions and the criminal histories. I think that's where it ends up. So I would move that Senate File 775 be recommended pass and referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Second. Senator Hand moves the bill we recommended to pass to judiciary. Is there any discussion on that? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Hand, bill moves to judiciary.
Thank you.
And we do have an update on Senator Howe's bill, Senate File 288. Senator Limmer has indicated he does not need to see that in his Judiciary Committee. So if Senator Lori wants to renew his motion to send that bill over to Finance, Senator Lori moves that Senate File 288, recommended pass, is sent to Finance. Is there any discussion?
As amended.
As amended. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is sent to Finance. Now we will take up Senate File 1055. Senator Shin.
Just doesn't carry over there. I don't know what it is.
Can you hear me on this one?
Yeah,
it's
better.
It's like it doesn't even work. This is a bill that makes some technical changes requested by the Board of Nursing. Before we move too far, though, there are some author's amendments, I suppose, like oral amendments that I'd like to make to correct the bill. The first is correction is on line 5. I put the wrong numbers down here. So 5.24, referring to re-registration fees, that's an error. It should be $105 instead of $145. And then the second part of the author's amendment would be to eliminate or delete line 6.17, which is repealer language.
Oral amendment is to repeat, eliminate line 6.17 and change the number on line 5.24 from 145 to 105. Is that correct?
To 105, $105 is the accurate number.
And you'd like to offer that as a
yes, please. Amendment? Yes.
So Sharon offers the oral author's amendment. Everybody understand what we're doing? Any questions? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. And with that, I'll introduce someone that you're familiar with, Shirley Brecken, who's the Executive Director of the Board of Nursing, who will explain the technical changes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you, Senator Sharon. This is really a housekeeping bill, and to date we've not heard any objections to the portions that are being presented to you. Basically, I'll be very quick about the kinds of things that the bill does. It authorizes the board to accept and spend grants, gifts, and conference fees. And in particular, this really refers to the ability to accept research grants that the board may bid for. There's a change to the licensure by examination, and that is really, again, a sort of a technical change. Right now, any nurse who is educated outside of Canada or the United States, any non-U.S. or non-Canadian individual, has to have been educated in a program that is conducted in English, or if that program was not conducted in English, they're required to take an English proficiency examination, both spoken and written. The little glitch in there is that Quebec is a French-speaking province in Canada. And so what this does is require individuals who graduate from a program in Quebec that was conducted in French, we do get French transcripts and then we have to have them translated, would have to take an English proficiency examination or meet the same requirements as others who weren't educated in English. It eliminates a temporary permit for new grads, and that's primarily because it's no longer needed. Right now, new graduates of nursing programs can apply for their license online. They can take their examination online, and the board actually is able to license them within 24 to 48 hours of their taking the examination. Those of you who are nurses in the room remember having to wait for 6 to 8 weeks when it was in paper and pencil, and now it's done much more quickly. It eliminates the late fee for nurses who are renewing their license in the last month of their participation period. Again, it's just no longer needed. Nurses now can renew their license online 2 minutes prior to midnight of the time it's going to expire, and so that late fee is no longer needed. It eliminates the authority, or the requirement for the board to send out a certificate or a wallet-sized certificate upon renewal of the license. And this is really a public safety issue. We have many experiences of individuals who alter their paper card. They change the name. They change the date of expiration. They use somebody else's card. And so this is really – and employers now – do verify the license online. The board's been doing that for about 8 years, and so it really, again, is getting rid of we're going paperless, getting up to date. It changes the name of the re-registration fee to a re-registration fee, and it changes the amount, reduces the amount from $145 to $105. And the reason for that is currently in the law, it requires an individual to pay the renewal fee of $85 plus a late fee. And many people let their license lapse, and when they come back to get reinstated and they're told they're paying a late fee, they say, why am I paying a late fee? I let this go, you know, for convenience, or I was out of state or whatever. So it's really kind of cleaning that up. And finally, it codifies all of the fees in one place in the statute. Some of the fees are in rule. Some were never codified. There are no increase in fees here, no new fees. It actually is a reduction or an elimination of some fees. So that's the only change that's there. And given that, I'll stand for any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Any other testimony that anyone else would like to testify on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Sir Nino.
Just one quick question. It's really more of a curiosity. Line 6-1, there's a microfilmed licensure application materials. And there's a fee for that. Is most of it not microfilmed and some still are? Is that why there's a special line for that?
Ms. Brecken?
Mr. Chair, Senator, they are all microfilmed, but in many instances they are. We have to go to have them a print made of that microfilm if somebody needs a copy. And we're charged that fee to do that.
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino raises an interesting point. They're not scanned in and kept electronically, they're microfilm still? I mean, is there this changing, or these are antique licensure applications from 20 years ago?
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, the answer is yes to your question. Yes, we're doing electronic document scanning now.
Okay.
We've been doing that for about 2 years, but we have all of
way
those others in microfilm, like mine, antiques.
Okay.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I have a technical change. On line 2.30, the new language just says, which that, which should be a that, or which was. Delete which, insert that is what I'm trying to say. It's just a grammar thing. It's the English major in me.
And Senator Sharon, are you agreeable to the... Senator Higgins offers oral amendment.
Excuse me, would you have Senator Higgins show me her source on that, please?
Back on my desk.
You can do that offline, Senator Higgins. But Senator Higgins moves oral amendment, line 2.30, deleting the word which at the end of the sentence, replacing with the word that. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Other questions or observations, grammatical or otherwise, from members of the committee? And Senator Sharon, what we are doing is we are going to assemble a policy bill. The House is also assembling a policy bill. And our intention is to lay this over for inclusion in that provision, if that's acceptable.
Acceptable.
Okay. We will lay the bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus policy bill that we intend to complete by the end of the week. we have some good luck here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Sharon, is you have 837 as well. Senator Sharon, did you want to take up 837 or did you want to?
I can't. My disappointment.
Okay. We're just trying to do what we can with, but I understand Senator Marty may be willing to take up Senate File 704. This will just save us a little extra time this evening so we won't have to stay as late, I hope.
Thank you, Senator Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate File 704, I have an A1 amendment, if you could distribute that. And while it's being distributed, I'll just briefly explain. I don't remember which years, but 2008 and 2009, we passed a requirement that doctors use e-prescribing effective January 1st of this year, and electronic medical record work, they have to be doing that by 2015. And one of the doctors, a doctor in Little Canada who is a solo practitioner, of which he told me I didn't realize is we only have about 100 solo practitioner doctors in the state now, and not many with small practices, obviously in small towns, might have one or two doctors in a clinic, but often they're affiliated with a major, like the Mayo system or something. But there are very few small doctors like this, and it's a big shift to make this change. We had a meeting with the doctor and the health and DHS departments yesterday because the departments have been saying, well, we're not planning to fine them. There's no penalty for not complying with the January 1st of this year thing. What we're trying to do is push them to make sure they do all of this by January 2015. And the doctor said he knows they're going to be making these changes. They have to do it. But they've been hearing from a lot of people who are, even though there's no penalty for violating it, he says, we don't like to be violating the law. We're trying to move this way. But it's a major shift for a small practice to do that. So with this A1 amendment, which I will move to put the bill in the shape, I'd like to have it presented, that for the language of the bill, which you can see on page one, that by January 1st, they were all supposed to be using e-prescribing. And in effect, for a clinic with two or fewer physicians, they'd be exempt from it if they're making a good faith effort to meet the electronic health records requirement under 62J495. That includes electronic prescriptions. This is one small part of the electronic health records. And with the putting it in so this expires at that time, obviously they're only exempted from this until that time. That's basically what the department's practice has been, but technically what it means for a doctor like this is that they're technically violating the law, but nobody's going to do anything about it. They said, look, can we treat it this way? The doctor would be thrilled to have it treated that way. The department, I believe, is neutral on this. We shared the language with them this morning after we met with them, and but I don't know, maybe somebody is here from one of the two departments if you want to ask for that. But with that, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Senator Marty moves as an author's amendment the A1 amendment. Any questions?
No.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, what does good faith mean? I mean, just what does good faith mean?
Senator Marty, good faith.
Good faith.
I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but it's...
In effect, are they moving forward? The bottom line is they have to comply with that by January 2015. In the discussion, just to show how what the doctor said, I said, where did the 2016 come from? Apparently, whoever in the House drafted the bill came up with it. He said he preferred 2020. And when I said, talk with the department, they said it would make sense to make it occur the same time as the e-records thing in 2015. He said, and I looked at him, he said, yeah, that'd be smarter than 2016. I mean, even though it was opposite the direction he wants. What the doctors want to have is a logical thing, because all the electronic stuff, each hospital and everybody else has their own electronic record system. They don't all track with each other, and whether that'll be resolved by then, I don't know. But basically, I think these small practice doctors recognize the advantage of doing this. They're going to make the good faith effort. He says, I'm going to have to do this to stay in practice. I'm going to be doing it anyway, but this extra requirement along the way, the department is basically they're saying, hey, we want you to move this way. We're not going to enforce this anyhow, and we're trying to make the law conform with what they're doing so that these small practitioners are not breaking the law in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'd be happy to stand for questions either on the amendment or the bill.
Senator Berglund.
Chairman and Senator Marty, you know, when we passed this legislation, we anticipated that small providers would join with others. Even, I mean, it's like renting space in a building. You can rent space in somebody's electronic record system. You don't have to be part of a large system in order to have access to it, and you don't have to invent it or do it all by yourself. You know that the federal government is going to be penalizing providers that don't have electronic records in the Medicaid or Medicare program beginning a year from now.
And 2016,
all
I think.
Who have participate with clients who have Medicare Part D need to be involved with electronic prescribing already. So, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm going to vote against your bill, but I do think encouraging people to have electronic medical records is an important thing to do, and passing laws that give more time, then, you know, when that time comes, then they want more time again, is not exactly doing people a favor, in my opinion.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, I agree. I'm not trying to. In other words, the goal is, and I think the departments in their practices have been saying, we want to move people in this direction. We want to make it happen. My health plan already has electronic medical records, and it's wonderful. You get a test done somewhere, your doctor or any specialist or the hospital already has it there because it's electronically done. In terms of this, the difficulty is, in terms of these small providers, there is some funding available. I believe the Medicare penalization starts in 2016, at least the part I'm aware of, and so it's going to be happening. Every doctor is going to be doing this. The difficulty is that, you know, we don't, it's kind of like the fight 20, 30 years ago between Beta and VHS. And I mean, everybody kind of, which system do you buy into? What do you do? And we've got these small doctors are trying to do it, and I think they don't. I mean, he says, we're going to be doing this. We know we're going to be doing it. Let's just try and do it in a logical way. And the departments, again, the fact that they've decided we're not penalizing anybody for not doing it, as long as they're moving towards what we want to have by 2015, we want to have everybody electronically done, including the e-prescribing provisions. But I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think we should be moving in that direction, and they will be penalized if they're not moving that way. And this is simply to say, look, since everybody's agreed we're not penalizing anybody for doing it, we want them to meet the bigger requirement, which will include this.
Any other questions? We have adopted the amendment, I believe. And so I guess if there's no other questions, then
I will suggest you ask if either of the departments is here, because we did meet with six or seven of their folks, and I don't know if they had any. When we read them this language this morning, they said they were neutral on it. I believe that's what I heard. I did not talk directly this morning.
From the department?
Mr. Chair, I don't recall voting on the amendment.
Good point.
I thought we did.
I don't know that we did, but you did move the amendment.
I did move
that,
the amendment.
And I thought we, but maybe not. Let's just be sure. We'll do it again. We'll take the A1 amendment. Senator Marty moves the A1 amendment as author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Now we do have the
we'll move the bill
as amended. And is that the intention then to lay this over for inclusion?
I think you were planning to put your broader policy bill.
Yeah. We had wanted to lay this over for inclusion in the policy bill. So we will do that. Thank you, Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
We do have six more bills that we want to hear today. I think that because of other committees going on today, that we'll probably have to do those this evening. Senator Kubli has Senate File 61, Senator Senjum 527, Senator Langseth 10, Senator Benson has 1211, Senator Hall 1179, and Senator Sharon has 837. So I think that we will have to recess until 6 p.m., where we will take up those bills and hopefully not be here too late, and hopefully that the snow won't occur. Rumors about that. So if there's no other questions, we will adjourn until our recess, until 6 p.m. Thanks.
Can we leave our